This is the August 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick. He's with AgMarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Chuck Shelby is here from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Mike Zuzulo joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website, on demand at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Or look Commodity Week up in your favorite podcast applications. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day first. Of course, I know everybody will have the USDA report on their list. There may be some specific things you want to talk about, Jim McCormick, but what else might be on your list too?
I think one of the real things specifically we got to look at is probably the use equation of the balance sheet that the government gave us, specifically the beans. We just think they're way too optimistic on the demand for the beans. And I think it's got a lot of ramifications to what this balance sheet looks like, Todd. A lot of people think the slow Chinese demand is already priced in the market. And I question that, plain and simple.
Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities on your list.
Well, have we seen the biggest yield from USDA, or will the crop get larger as we move into September?
And Mike Zuzulo.
I think the biggest question probably I'm getting right now in a post-WASD environment, Todd, is whether we can go lower. Is it worth getting hedges in place if we go between now and the combine's roll, especially with the big tour coming up here in the next week or so?
I want to come back to that, but let's start with the big crop. Can it get bigger? USDA, of course, releasing for the national yields records for both corn and soybeans. And Chuck Shelby, they upped the acreage for the soybeans as well. That gave us an ending stocks number of 560 million bushels. The Ag Economist undertone today here on the campus of Purdue in West Lafayette, Indiana, as they were gathered for the Extension Outlook meeting, was that we don't know. I think they would toss a coin as to whether this big crop could get bigger than what the USDA gave us on Monday of this week. What do you think?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is there's some rainfall around, but the amounts have been not as large as predicted. I know I was talking to a producer in South Dakota today, and they've also missed some rainfall. So in my mind, I believe we probably have maxed out on the size, especially on the beans. They need those late rains to really fill out the pods. So at this point in time, I think those are pretty large numbers, especially the corn beats last year by about 6 bushel. I know there's a lot of disease pressure around in some areas, and, you know, producers with these low prices, do they treat it once? Do they treat it twice? So I think our feeling is those are pretty large numbers USDA printed last month, and that's probably as big as it's going to get.
Does anybody else have a thought on that? And I guess I will go around the horn because I'm sure you do. Jim McCormick, on the size of both the corn and soybean crop yields?
You know, it's impossible to guess that. I mean, it was a very aggressive upward revision in August, but, you know, the old axiom is big crops get bigger. It will come down to weather. If you look at the noon GFS model run, now there's multiple model runs. So every, you know, picking one model run, Todd, obviously is a very dangerous game. But the latest model run says, hey, between now and the end of August, all of Iowa is going to get at least, you know, you're looking at an inch to 2.5 inches of rain, southern Minnesota, 2 to as much as 3 inches of rain. All of Illinois, they're talking 1 to 1.5 to 2 inches of rain all the way across the eastern Corn Belt. So, like, you know, late August rains can add a lot to beans. And the weather, a lot of the agronomists I've talked to said you couldn't ask for much better weather to fill this corn out. So test weight could surprise us. So I would not. I mean, I'm not going to bet any money on which way it's going to go, but I truly wouldn't be surprised if it does creep up a little bit bigger. I think we saw the big move up. If we do it, it's going to be fractions of bushels, but I think it still could get bigger if this weather, you know, as the latest model run is correct.
And finally, Mike Zuzlo, and I will say that on Thursday on the Purdue campus, Lance Honig from USDA NAS, who was the chief of the crops branch and still is, but also has a promotion there at USDA, said he was surprised by the lack of blowback that USDA NAS has gotten from those very large numbers, and that most producers and others have agreed with them. And actually, the Ag Economist were all in agreement that they were surprised that there wasn't more bucking at the size of this crop. So do you think that these crops can get bigger?
I'm dubious that they can, Todd. I just came back from Northwest Ohio and did a couple crop insurance meetings up in that corner of the country, and then drove right around Jim and Chuck's area, and then back through central Illinois, back through your area, and then northern half of Missouri. And my big takeaway was, and I'd love to hear the other guys, because they see it in the fields as opposed to me just stopping in a couple fields. But my big takeaway was, in the areas that the trade thinks the big crop is I think east of the Mississippi for the most part. And Jim's point about Iowa is really important. But I would say the best crop in those areas that I saw were the earliest crop, and they're already denting. So I think that limits you in terms of upside, in terms of yield for corn. There's plenty of pods on the beans, but there's a lot of rain that has to happen, to Chuck's point. I think the blowback would come if they tried to raise the crop too much from here. The only other thing I would say is producers in Ohio had a really tough start in areas that really need to have good yields. Double crop wheat beans barely up to your sneaker, and regular beans, lots of fields that no more than 6, 7, 8 inches high. So I guess I feel like that second crop that's out there, that variability that's there, is going to present a real problem to us, especially for the soybeans and the timing and the fact that we're probably going to lose some leaves here pretty soon by the end of the month. So last thing I'll say about it is, one producer told me in Ohio the exact same thing a Missouri producer told me, and that was they had no zeros in their corn last year. They will have zeros in their corn this year. I think you got to have that kind of field all the way across before you can go above this 183 level.
Now, Chuck, I'll get a question in for you here in just a moment, and I do want to ask you about the length of the planting season and what you think impact that might have on the corn crop in particular, maybe the soybeans. Just to come back with some of the numbers from the USDA from Monday in Ohio, that was the one of the few places in the eastern corn belt, or the far eastern part of the United States, did have several corn yields that were lower than last year, but Ohio was down 10 bushels from last year, Indiana up 4 for corn, Illinois up 19, Missouri a 28 bushel increase, Iowa up 8, and then no change for Minnesota, Nebraska up 12 bushels. So that's kind of what those numbers look like when they came out on Monday from USDA. It was a fairly lengthy planting season. We haven't seen one of those in some time. Usually it seems to all happen at the same time. It all comes through the whole of the growing season at the same time. Does this wider planting date mean very much to you, as it's related to what you think the crop will finish out like?
Well, what it does is maybe makes the corn wetter. You know, it doesn't dry down as quickly, so for some of the later planted crop. But you got to give credit to the temperatures have been, you know, really cool. We haven't had really a lot of hot weather, so that's a benefit to the crop as it finishes. But at the end of the day, I just think this crop is going to be slow to get harvested due to the fact of the spread out of the planting season. But overall, again, it's a good crop. It's just, you know, how big is big.
So, Mike Zuzlo, let's turn your attention back to how low can we go. What are your estimates at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to oversimplify things because it usually beats me up pretty bad, but I really do think it's important for producers to not have a doom and gloom attitude right now. We really have to think about our marketing and stay on the line. So I'm using 2014, have been using 2014 as a model year. We went down, I think, around 904 for a low in November beans. So at current value, at current levels, still very hedgeable. Went down a little bit below 320 in December corn, still very hedgeable in terms of potential loss between now and that low in 2014 was September 30th. I kind of like that too, Todd, because of the election and the idea that the dollar may stay strong and as a safe haven before the election, because I think the economic policies of the two candidates are so different in terms of strong dollar versus weak dollar. And also I like that from a standpoint that you cover yourself, especially now, until you get to the harvest price figuring in October for the crop insurance. And so I think it has a several, you know, faceted role that, yeah, I think paper positions are the right thing to do, especially if you are one of those producers that are suffering from yield decline potentially because you're missing rains.
Well, if you look at where on the corn specifically, start with that. Your stocks to use fell a little bit, 13.9%. What we've been saying all along, Scott, from 2014-15 marketing year, the next 5 years, each year those stocks use ended between 12.6 and 15.5. What did every one of those years have in common? Every one of those years, corn went at least to 350. A couple years, they went to the low threes. As the previous gentleman noted, it went in 2014, kind of the analog year a lot of people are looking at. It got down to 320. So I think we're at least going to go to 350. It could go a lot lower. How much lower probably depends on maybe how the election goes, as well as, you know, how big is. If it has topped out, that would help. And if corn goes to 350, Scott, Todd, what you're looking at is stocks to use ratio on the corn. Go to the beans. The bean to corn ratio would argue low $9 beans, maybe below. So, you know, I do think there's some more downward risk. I'd rather do it on paper than sell cash. Although, Todd, I've told some clients today that they came to me and said, look, in southern Indiana, like, I've got bushels I cannot store. I'm going to need to have a choice, either sell them out of the field or pay commercial storage. And my recommendation, if you got bushels that you know you're going to have to sell out of the field, I'd rather do it first than last, because right now it looks like a big crop that we're going to struggle to put away. And that usually means a very negative basis, unfortunately.
I guess I don't have any arguments with both the guys on their lower end numbers. I think a good point made by Jim is if this big crop in the East, you've got to find a home for it. If you don't have enough storage, what's the basis going to be when we, you know, ultimately get going on harvest? And it's a problem I think producers are just starting to come to grips with. And it certainly brings up the question of how do you handle this? And selling it here at these prices, I know it's not as desirable as it was, but when you look at where the futures may go, what's a basis going to be? So significantly cheaper cash price than what we're looking at right now.
In the Thursday closing market report, I spoke with Frayn Olson from North Dakota State University. We were talking a great deal about storage and basis, particularly on farm storage as compared to across the scale and storing at the elevator. His suggestion simply was that if you went all in, that the on-farm storage cost is approximately the same as storage at the elevator, and then was suggesting some things as it's related, Chuck, I think, to how producers might be able to handle this, and I suppose you'll be able to help us out with this a little bit. Thinking about the carry in the market, particularly for corn at this point, whether it's worthwhile using, and how you might be able to deliver for what you can put in the bin on the farm, that is, to a processor in the future, if you get a bid from them now for delivery sometime in the winter months. Is that something that you've thought about or that producers might want to think about?
I think producers need to use their bins to get through harvest. I mean, that's one of the reasons we have a lot of bin storage, is because to get through harvest, because with a big crop, a lot of the processors are limited on how much they can take in. It is a carry market, which is by definition those back end months, unless something changes, they're going to drift down to where the SEP goes off or the DEES goes off. So the strategy would be to use your bin, sell the carry. If you wanted to enhance that, I know, you know, the idea of buying puts was brought up. Sell the carry for the physical and look at the opportunity to buy some put options to add some premium back to your cash sale.
So by sell the carry, and let me walk through this, you mean look at, so if I was going to deliver to the elevator or to the in processor, and maybe the processor probably will have, may likely have a better bid in a future out month, you're really talking about just making a cash sale for delivery and then coming back and covering that with options. Is that what you're discussing?
Yeah, go out, and if you want to deliver, let's say next March or April, you go ahead and sell that forward cash sale, lock that in. The basis is still fairly decent out there. The price is higher, certainly. And then if you wanted to try to enhance that, you could buy a put. If this market goes down to 320 or 350 or wherever, maybe you pick up 20, 30 cents on a put option. You can add that back to your cash sale that you've made on the physical that's in the bin and enhance your price that way.
Mike Suzalo, are there differences regionally in the way basis is reacting at this point as you deal with different clients across the Midwest and how they might need to handle this market?
Yeah, and I think that's going to get more sensitive as we get towards the election and past the election as far as the market and some of the energy producers and biofuel producers. Especially in the biodiesel, I think, Todd, one of the big reasons why we've had a big break in futures is the idea that maybe the EPA won't allow some of these RINs to take hold or some of these credits to take hold in the case of in biodiesel. And so I think it is going to become more difficult for us as analysts to have to manage both the futures risk and the basis risk because of that energy equation. And now on the positive side, if we don't have this talked about rail strike with the Canadian rail, the positive side is that if we do get a break in the dollar, and with the fact that I still think there's probably 6 to 7 million tons of corn that Brazil did not produce that USDA thinks they did, and maybe the same amount that Ukraine could go down versus what USDA's current level is, I think our exports could pick up quite a bit. So, I mean, I think that's where there is some demand out there I think we can grab a hold of. The fear I have, though, is that, as Jim highlighted it earlier, the soybean demand is a big question mark because there's no question that China and Brazil are trying to connect together more and more and more. And I don't see that changing anytime in the near future. And so we will be, I think, the seller of last resort as far as what China looks at for beans eventually if we stay on this current track.
And I think I'll go around the horn again with you, and I'll start with you, Mike. Which commodity, and you can include wheat in this as well, which commodity do you believe has most downside risk today, corn, soybean, or wheat?
I would say soybeans because both the U.S. and the global stocks and the uncertainty about China.
Jim McCormick?
It's definitely the beans, in my opinion.
I would have to agree with both the other guys. The beans are in a precarious position right here with a larger carryout and uncertainty over China demand.
All right. So let's go back then. If farmers probably need to deal with soybeans at this point, Jim, what do they do? And I'll follow up with Chuck and then Mike.
Well, like I said earlier, I think it's the same situation. If you've got beans that you know you can't store and you know the crop and you're feeling pretty good about it, I would probably get aggressive and start forward selling some of them. You can always come back and re-own them on paper with a vertical call spread or something. But you know, the problem I see, Todd, is you know, export demand this old crop year is 1.7 billion bushels. Export for the new crop is up 125. But if you look at where we are for sales, we sold somewhere around 1.1 million metric tons of beans to China that we know. We know there's an unknown is around 3.2. So you're right around 4.3 million. That probably went to China. They're normally somewhere between 8 and 12 million. Okay, so we're not even close to where we should be to reach the old crop number. The new crop number looks incredibly artificial and fake as a way to try to cushion the blow to the farmer to keep that carry out from getting too out of whack. And if they do not pick up pace and they're just waiting for the Brazilians to produce this crop, eventually the balance sheet is going to have to reflect it, and the market will then reflect what the balance sheet is showing, and you could get another leg down. So if you don't feel comfortable selling the cash, I'd at least buy puts to protect the downside. The risk is there. And then, you know, we don't know who's going to become president, but president, you know, Trump has threatened to ratchet up the trade war going, you know, again. So the compound impact could be a trade war on top of a massive supply. The world production, Todd, if Brazil has what they think they could do, we will have projected ending stocks, gross tonnage, the highest ever. Ever, stocks use the second highest. We've just got too many beans. The market, in essence, has got to go down to discourage production in a way.
If you have storage, it'd be the same strategy. There's carry in the market. It's still above $10. And going ahead and, you know, trying to lock in some of that. But again, if you're forced to go across the scale, the question becomes, is it going to be better at harvest than where we are now? That seems unlikely with the size of this crop coming. And again, the question is, will China come in? Would prices be cheaper? Would you come in and buy at harvest? Those are still unknown. So again, you got to be defensive there and have some kind of strategy, make a decision, get it going. If you have bins, I like selling to carry. There's opportunities again to come back in and reown on paper that's relatively cheap.
Hard to do in a week, I think, Chuck, where life of contract lows were made. Am I correct on that for November soybeans?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult for a producer to sell into a down market, especially after we've gone through the last several years where if you didn't sell anything, you could still make money, still had a good market. But recognizing all the things we've discussed here, you know, we just have to change our attitude as producers and take a very defensive strategy here, at least going into harvest with the opportunity to know such a large crop coming. Demand is suspect. You just have to be defensive in the next several months.
And Mike Suzalo, your thoughts on marketing soybean?
I'd only add two things to broaden the scope of what you need to be doing and not to be in, like I said before, a doom and gloom mindset and not even think about it. I think you can work your way out of this. We have a very high base level price for both corn and beans for the crop insurance. And if you do a bought put for what you cannot store, for what you can store, then you have a, you know, chance to bring back your revenue per acre. Again, the disease pressure that I'm starting to hear in central Illinois, the missed rains and the spotty rains, I just want to reiterate the idea we haven't made the crop yet. And that doesn't take away from the fact that Brazil has a ton and China's not buying ours, and that Brazil is only, 3 months away from putting in that next crop. But it goes back to that individual producer and what his risk management tolerance is. And if he's got disease pressure like some of my central Illinois producers are starting to tell me about, and they miss the rains, I really don't want them to do anything more as far as hedge what they have to sell off the combine they cannot store.
Let's come back to the balance sheets now, Jim McCormick. The usage for corn has been strong. Chad Hart from Iowa State University argued that it's actually been really good. While the numbers are large from USDA, that domestic usage has been good, though, again, the exports are problematic.
Well, he's right. I mean, the domestic has been, you know, ethanol has been running on fire. There's no doubt about it. The feed, I think, is going to be one of the wild cards of where we're at. The quarterly grain stock number kind of suggested one way. Then they've kind of said we're feeding a lot of livestock. I do question the feed a little bit simply because, you know, part of the reason why cattle are trading all-time highs is we got the smallest cattle herd in 50 years. We've obviously rebounded the grass out west. Hog industry has been bloodied pretty bad. And, you know, the poultry went through a lot of bird flu problems. So, you know, the demand of the feed is always a wild card. That could, you know, surprise us. But the one thing that is friendly out there is the countries that do import corn are not carrying a lot of bushels. So we are price competitive. I think if the market can give a signal, Todd, that, hey, we've put that fall low in, I think people will step up. But I think right now they're waiting to see what happens, because it's part of it is, as we've been talking, the weaker dollar potentially helps a lot. The other thing is just the cost of money. You know, if the market's trading sideways to lower, you're better off doing nothing, because if you've got to borrow money to hedge in a crop or to buy a physical product and it doesn't go anywhere, you still have that money cost. So right now, I think they're just waiting for that fall low. But I think once they do, I think producers need to look at an opportunity to rebound. I think we brought up 2014. It did go to 320 that year, but by the time in early October, by the time we got to December, it was back to $4. We will get a rebound, I believe. It's just once we bottom out, how vicious will that rebound be?
Mike Zuzulo, a point of clarification as to the size of the world crop. Is it that the United States is just about to produce and harvest so much corn that will overwhelm, for instance, the issues that the Black Sea, Ukraine particularly, has had all season long with heat and drought?
I don't see it that way, Todd. I think you ask a huge question as far as the potential price of this market. And that this is why I think wheat still leads the market and why the EU Paris market still leads the Chicago market and why Egypt walking away from that almost 4 million metric ton tender, it's been reported now, made such a dent in our price action in a very, what you would classify, I think, bullish wheat report when you saw the lowest wheat stocks to use ratios globally in 10 years. And I think this is why the funds will not, I don't think, want to buy into grains ahead of the election because they are nervous about trade and demand. And that goes directly back to why they're buying the dollar. And I think those things are all interrelated.
Chuck Shelby, anything else that we should take up before I get a final word from each of you?
Well, I think to Mike's point there, what's going on? We have two wars going on in the world. And I think until we really solve those two issues, it goes back to guns are better. We just sent $20 billion to Israel, how many billions have we sent to Ukraine? The problem is right now with demand, it's a very uncertain world, two conflicts going on. We need to resolve those before I think we can really see things settle down and we can see increased demand for our agricultural products.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. We'll start with you.
Definitely a little bit bearish conversation we had today. If you're a producer out there, I think you got to realize where the risk is at the moment. But the uncertainty is very, very high. That will bring volatility back into the market. I think near term, prepare for that fall low. But once we get through it, I do think you will see brighter days down the line. But bear for the near term that it could be a little bit uglier than what anyone wants to see.
Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Your final word.
There's still things we can do as producers to try to manage our risk here and take some things off the table. It's going to be a new year. It's going to be a good harvest for a lot of guys. So we'll prepare for another year and hope we have everybody has a safe harvest and a good harvest.
And finally, Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas.
Just to cap off what the other guy said, Todd, this is the kind of market we've been in before. And psychologically, if you come in and spend 15 cents on a Deese corn put and 25 cents, 30 cents on a Nove bean put, and that position is wrong, and the fundamentals are as negative as we've presented them, I got to think that you're probably going to be able to more than offset that loss, and you're going to be really, I think, a lot better off mentally having something underneath you at this point. And so I always play the same mindset as what if I'm wrong, and I wouldn't mind being wrong by buying puts right now.
Our thanks go to our panelists, including Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, and Mike Zuzulo of GlobalComResearch.com. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.